Africa is currently experiencing a demographic boom. It's largely young and urban, unlike Germany, where we see a median age of roughly 47, the US at 38, or China at 37. The median age in Africa is roughly 19. And additionally, this demographic of African youth is expected to double to 225 million people by 2055. Now, seizing the opportunity in this demographic dividend isn't a given. And while tools like AI and machine learning can certainly help deliver services like healthcare and education at greater scale and reduced cost, there are also concerns about job displacement and whether we are equipping the youth with the right skills, and bad state actors who might seek to take advantage of deep fakes and all of those issues to suppress political dissent. And just consider that the South African Local Government Association says only 62% of municipal councillors, or roughly, I should say, 62% of municipal councillors don't know how to use a computer. So there are challenges, but also opportunities. To talk about this, it's a great pleasure to welcome Nomsa Ntuleko, who's the founder and CEO of OS Holdings and the Chief Commercial Officer at Amatuba AI, Jade Abbott, who's a machine learning lead at Retro Rabbit, and Johan Steyn, Business Day contributor on tech and AI and chair of the Special Interest Group on AI and Robotics within the Institute of Information Technology Professionals of South Africa. So welcome all. Nomsa, your experience is specifically in business and financial management systems. You really are all about assisting businesses in automating their business processes from HR to payroll and supply chain and PFMA and MFMA accounts as well. How did you make your way from ERP into AI?
Thank you very much for that introduction and also giving us an opportunity to have a conversation around AI. So the opportunity actually came in 2020 while we were going through the lockdown and the pandemic. It purely comes from my love and my interest of automating business processes and always finding ways and means where we can save time for people, and we allow bots to do what bots are supposed to be doing. So it has been an exciting journey, and I'm looking forward to even going into the solutions that can be out there where AI is concerned. So it's purely from the love of how can we automate solutions? How can we make work easier for the people that are sitting behind the machines?
And to free up their resources and their capacity to focus on the more human tasks of empathy and creativity and all of those things. Jade, to bring you into the conversation, Retro Rabbit, just tell us a little bit more about what you do at Retro Rabbit, I believe based here in Braamfontein, so just around the corner from the studios, and how you also came to find yourself in the space of machine learning in particular.
Thank you. Yes. So RetroRabbit is one of South Africa's top kind of digital products companies, with kind of over 15 years of experience in kind of agile development, software engineering, data science, and user experience. And so I found myself in this space actually from a long time ago when I was a kid. I really wanted to build a little robot friend that I could talk to. And so it's been like an underlying passion. And I found myself studying computer science and working in kind of the software consulting space. And at some stage, I got the opportunity to work in natural language processing, which is basically AI for anything that's text related. And so from there, I was collaborating with this startup and realized in the process that we're missing a lot of these tools and support for these sort of language technologies for African languages. So co-founded an initiative called Masakane, which is a collaborative research initiative focused on these African language tools.
And we had one of your colleagues on the show in one of our previous conversations as well. And Johan, what strikes you about the journeys of these two pioneering women in AI, apart from the fact that it's great for the kind of gender diversity conversation? Because I think in tech, broadly speaking now, we don't see enough women developers and involved in the space.
Michael, that's so true. I mean, I'm involved with the IRT PSA and supporting the women special interest group. And they're always surprised that there's a bunch of us guys attending, because we say we also want to hear, we want to have a voice. But it's something we should always be aware of. You know, there are so many biases that we see in algorithms, you know, facial recognition that struggles with female or darker skin faces. So it's an important issue. But what I like about the journey of both Namsa and Jade is, firstly, that like we always say on the show, there's so many people doing amazing things in this space in our local market. But also, I think a lot of people pivoted their career at some stage, you know, a lot of, including myself, I did not start off in AI or tech for that matter. But I think there is so much room for people who have a passion. And I think we should do more to ignite this fourth industrial revolution passion in people. So, so happy that we have these two amazing ladies with us today.
And Namsa, let's maybe dial it back a bit for a baseline here. How would you define artificial intelligence? Because we've got smart machines, so-called smart machines, but in terms of real artificial intelligence, many still say it's some way away still. How do you define artificial intelligence?
How I define it from my perspective is that how do we take the intelligence of human and automate it? So that's really my definition is how can we start looking at automating what a human can do or what a human can replicate. But more than anything, what I've seen or what we are looking at Amatubai AI, we're saying that how do we take back humanity through technology? As far as I'm concerned, artificial intelligence is when you're having a human and you're having a machine and they're doing great things together. I'm not a believer that AI should be working independent of human or human intelligence. So that is basically what I think when it comes to artificial intelligence. How can it work together with humans?
And Jade, you know, from putting a machine learning lens on this, how do you define what machine learning is in terms of its benefit to society? Because I think when many people think of artificial intelligence, they think of something, and to use your earlier point about building a robot, something that's going to replace humans, something that's going to take my job, and ultimately that creates a lot of fear and a lot of pushback against the adoption. How do you view it?
I have quite a cynical view. My cynical view is that we have, you know, AI is not smart enough to replace anyone at this point. And my very cynical view is that have we even achieved human intelligence? But we won't go there. So with AI, we're definitely not at the point where we can possibly replace something with human intelligence. There are a couple of things that are lacking in the machine learning space to enable that. For example, this idea of causality. As humans, we might be able to see that, you know, we can run an experiment to test that, you know, there's a causal relationship between, you know, it rains every time, or the chicken coos every time it rains. And we know that it's not the chicken cooing that's causing the rain, and it's in fact the, you know, response the other way around. And machine learning actually summarizes that away. And so it loses a lot of information. And for that reason, a lot of the machine learning that I care about and I'm involved in is this idea of human-in-the-loop learning. It's a way to augment and make people's lives easier by automating the tasks that are tedious and allowing them to focus on the stuff that really matters.
I think that's an important use case that we are seeing, Johan, in the market. So far, the big adopters have been the big banks. A lot of the asset management firms say that what this technology is really good for is recognizing patterns. And so you're seeing it used by Schroders, for example, in developing algorithms that can help with high-frequency trading. You're seeing it being used in robotic process automation applications inside the banks. But still, to Jade's cynical view, I tend to agree. I don't think we've seen anything remotely close to what we could deem real artificial intelligence yet.
I fully agree. Because, look, I think the technology has made amazing strides over the last few months, but we are still in what they call artificial narrow intelligence. So there are certain narrow tasks that the algorithms are very good at, and that's typically your back office repetitive kind of work. It's also good at recognizing patterns. You know, so if you have a million customers, I mean, there's no way that a person or a team of people will be able to recognize patterns in how those customers interact with you. So that's where this technology can be very good. But yes, there is a lot of hype. Will we get to more general artificial intelligence, as they call it? I think we will. No one really knows when, but that's really when the AI is as smart as, if you would, as humans. But I mean, we've already spoken now about intuition, about the softer side of humans, that I don't think we can automate that. So the key is, Michael, that we use AI for what it's good at, and not to try, and this is why I see a lot of my customers fail. They try and make it do things that the tech cannot do yet because of all the hype. It's very good at the things it's good at, but it's quite limited.
And we'll come back to that issue around whether or not ethically we're comfortable getting to a point with general AI where we're allowing the machine to continue learning unaided, unsupervised, and who knows what it might come up with. But I think that's a little bit dystopian. Let's move it back, Nomsa, into the world of what we can do, what the current technology does allow us to do, and what you're doing at Amatuba AI. Give us some examples, some real-world case studies of how you're applying this technology to help those back office processes become more efficient.
Thank you very much for that. I think I'll make a simple example for in a finance department. Let's say, for instance, you have an end user that is sitting at finance, and there's quite a lot of emails that are coming through, emails that have invoices that have a date, a description of an invoice, and a value of that invoice. So some of the technology that we have is you'd have a bot going through the emails and going through those invoices and taking that information and logging into a financial management and putting that information into the financial management. Throughout the process, it's looking out for errors. And what it would then do, it would give you an Excel report to say, this is all the information that I've extracted from your emails. And are you ready for this information to be posted in your financial management system? What you can also do, you can actually have a bot that is supervising that. That's where your machine learning is coming in, and it can then look and check if the data is correct, and it will post it in your financial management system. So what we've been working on, which is quite exciting, is when you take two different AIs, that is your RPA, which is your robotics process automation, and your machine learning. That combination, I think it's awesome to see it at work. And it really helps a number of organizations in terms of easing pressure. Think about a situation when you're getting 1,000 emails on daily basis. And as a human, you have to go through all those emails. There can be an element of error as you are taking information from one source or one system to another. So that is one of the examples that we are looking at. We also are looking at a situation where we are looking at building a AI doctor for differential diagnosis. What does that mean? You find that in healthcare at large, whether in rural areas or in the townships, there is a lack of doctors, and you have nurses that are sitting in these clinics. So AI can also be used to detect, you know, an illness of a patient, you know. So those are some of the POCs that we are working with and solutions that we believe can add real value, you know, because our belief is that we don't want to start big. Let's start with a very simplistic process. And again, my colleague Jade indicated that we can never replace a human with artificial intelligence. Let's start with a small process that can really provide a return on investment, save time, and tangible return on investment before you can even embark on AI. The major challenge is that people go into AI projects without really seeing the value of what the technology is going to bring into the organization.
And I know, Jade, you're passionate about this area of how organizations structure their data science, and they shouldn't have data science departments not speaking to the developers, not speaking to the business strategy and the product designers as well. So talk to me about, you know, using natural language processing and machine learning as your lens, how you see this being implemented successfully in the South African market. Give me some use cases and which companies are actually leading the way here.
So I think, once again, a controversial view is the machine learning actually isn't too difficult once you've got the data in the right place. And so what many organizations struggle with is, once again, we've got data scientists that isolated away from the business, but even more so is that businesses want to throw models at things when what they really just need is, you know, people asking intelligent questions about their data, and also bringing data in a form, kind of commoditizing the data within the organization so that it's much easier to access, so that people across different business silos can have access and share each other's data. So which organizations are doing this well? A number of the banks are starting up data governance initiatives. I think they're still early phase. I think we've kind of got a very, probably a bit of a backwards opinion on what data governance is doing. I think we're seeing it as like a set of rules that need to be abided, which the philosophy we should really be looking at it is this idea of kind of a friendly librarian who's trying to help you get the data to you and is able to kind of track it. My opinion is that we should be investing, take a pause on what we've been doing and really invest in our data engineering practices and really invest in our data governance practices to enable businesses to and data scientists actually do their job. Right now, a lot of them are sitting around waiting, fighting, trying to understand what the data is, why none of it makes sense. The places I've seen this work, where it's worked well, is very similar to what Nomsa was talking about. Particularly around the worlds of automating these large processes. So a common example we see and work on is in customer support, where you get loads and loads of these emails, and just simply being able to classify these emails to send them to the right and most appropriate department is a very quick way to add a lot of value. So you're not inspecting all these emails and then referring them on. We can handle a lot of that bulk upfront. And kind of pairing that up with something like a chatbot, where a bot will handle majority of the really kind of mundane details, and then, you know, at a point where it detects that it doesn't know what's happening, it'll hand over to a human. And so once again, you get this idea of, you know, how can we automate the boring stuff so that humans can focus on the bit that's actually important.
Yeah, there are, you know, a few real world case studies that spring to mind in my recent interactions with an internet service provider using that kind of system, a bot up front, until you get to a point where actually you need to be speaking to a human. And I found it refreshingly good from a customer or user experience perspective, because I have used some of those solutions years gone by where I find it just more frustrating than anything else. And I was just like, well, can I get through this? I just want to speak to the human at the end of the day. Johan, what do you make of what both Nomsa and Jade have said about the real world applications and potentially putting a pause and saying, well, let's focus more on the way we structure the data so we can really make proper sense of it?
Yeah, I think it comes back to what I'm always going on about, simple things like the business case. What are we trying to achieve? So let's not start by talking about platforms and machine learning and things like that. What are we trying to achieve? And that's why I always say these initiatives should be business led and supported by the tech people. But it happens the other way around often, where the techies are excited about a new platform and now we're trying to look for a business case. Because more often than not, currently in my view and experience, AI is not the answer to your common business problems. So let's, because you could use Excel or API calls or things like that. So that's, I think, what I've picked up, and I agree with both Nomsa and Jade are saying. And the important thing, again, is, and I call it cobotics. So you always have the human in the loop. Let the human be supported by technology in a smart way. Now, a good example here is a lot of your insurance companies that are automating some of their claim processes. I know somebody who's doing a lot of work in fraud detection, and they've got an interesting way that where they scan in hundreds and thousands of documents, and then this is where the machine learning comes in to start seeing the patterns. If the same name or ID number or other identifiable detail are picked up in other documents, which humans won't be able to pick up, it's much easier to solve fraud cases. But maybe just to conclude this, Michael, is start with the business case, don't think about tech, and then only start looking at what tech, if it is AI, could support that business case.
And it also then means, if you want to reverse that, that question, what sort of skills are you going to require from your C-suite or your executive management to be able to articulate that business case with a view to extracting the solution outside of the tech stack inside the business? But Nomsa, I want to come back to where you see the opportunity in the public sector, because just listening to what's been said already, I can imagine in the utility space, for example, if we apply this kind of pattern recognition to analyzing our water and our electricity bills, for example, surely applying some kind of bot to analyze when there's a huge spike that's outside of the ordinary usage of water, for example, you could be proactive here as a service delivery provider and say to the end user, you might want to check for leaks before you end up with a bill that's 10 times your ordinary water usage, for example. I suppose what I'm trying to say is, where do you see the big opportunity in the public sector for this kind of technology?
Sure. I think the example that you're using is that is one of the big examples that we can look at in terms of public sector to say, in terms of the usage and the wastage in terms of water, electricity, we can use AI to actually detect, or even predict, what will happen and what needs to be sorted out. The other area where we can have a beautiful use of AI is when we're managing the indigent. Within local government, you find that there is an indigent policy where you find that people are getting free services and from in terms of water and electricity. But you get people that are not getting out of that indigent register because no one is tracing and seeing that this person has now gotten a job and this person is now employed. They don't need to be in the indigent policy. So we can use AI to be able to, with the integration with the integration with SARS as well as Department of Labor, where we can remove a lot of people that are not supposed to be there, so that people that need to be in the indigent policy or assisted get a chance to be assisted. And also when we look in terms of the monitoring and the performance management of different municipalities, we can use AI to be able to tell if a municipality is achieving its projects on time and within the specific budget. So for public sector, it would actually add so much value and translate into proper service delivery and monitoring.
At this time, ahead of the local government elections, it sounds wonderful. It sounds like the president speaking of these smart cities and bullet trains. Jade, I'm going to ask you, because you seem to be the cynic on the panel, how achievable is this, though, when you've got Selga saying 62% of local councillors can't even use a laptop?
Cynically, I'd say, I still have hope, but I think we need to just, as you say, step one is get people in the more, just working in the digital space. I think often where people come and say we need AI, I'm like, no, you just need a database, step one, and then maybe you need an app on that, and you can solve probably 80% of the problems, and then you can solve your extra 20%. Your refinement can come from using AI and machine learning. And so while I think it's all really interesting, I do think it'll take a little bit of time until we're there. But I do think it's possible, and I do think we're moving in the right direction. I think it would be interesting for the government to self-reflect and find these particular areas where they could focus on, further digitization, further opening up of data. And we've seen that. There have been a number of laws that have come out. Well, not laws, but proposals. So there's the recent, I think it's Data and Cloud Bill, which is really focused on creating a cloud for, South African data that's, hosted in the country, and a number of services around that. And so I think we've started this slower process of digitizing government.
And can you just imagine what we could do then with all of those efficiency gains in a fiscally constrained environment such as this? We could free up all of those resources to really help the indigent and to stimulate economic growth. Johan, just as we're ending off, we've got a couple of minutes left. How do we ensure that we are fully prepared as all stakeholders here, business, government and labor, for this revolution, to take advantage of these opportunities and not watch them pass us by?
I like the premise of your question, Michael, because it cannot be just government. We all have to work together. If I maybe just comment on what Jade and Mamsa just said as part of answering your question, and I wrote about this in Business Day a few weeks ago. I mean, if you're the ruling party and most of your electorate are reliant on grants, which means you would rather employ 10 people to a job, to do a job in a municipality than achieve efficiencies and employ one. I'm just wondering whether that impacts the government's will to really get to efficiencies. I don't know, and I don't want it to be a political issue. I'm just wondering about that. But, you know, we've had the 4IR results of the committee, when was it, October last year? Not much has happened. Mm-hmm. Business cannot do it by itself. So we need to find ways to really, because, I mean, there's so many opportunities. We've seen an amount of talent in our country through these interviews that you and I have been doing, Michael. So many people with great ideas, great skills and experience. The answers are here. We don't have to look to Silicon Valley, but the willpower, first in government and then to work with business, should be there. And I think until that is there, I don't think we'll see any movement, and the opportunity will unfortunately pass us by, I think.
Thank you very much, Johan Steyn, our regular AI and tech contributor, was joined by Nomsa Ntuleko, the founder and CEO of OS Holdings, chief commercial officer too at Amatuba AI, and Jade Abbott, machine learning lead at RetroRabbit.